Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read.
Welcome to Literary Quest. This week, we're discussing Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling. For us and a lot of people who read these books, they found a lot of meaning and comfort from the series, and we recognize that a lot of people have complicated feelings because of the anti-trans comments and actions that J.K. Rowling has made over the last few years. We love and support the trans community, and we will be addressing some of the controversial things that J.K. Rowling has done and said in this episode. I'm going to start with the characters, and Marissa will be doing our plot this episode. So, we have Harry Potter. Harry is an 11-year-old child. He is described as being thin, with black, unruly hair, green eyes, and a scar on his forehead that looks like a lightning bolt. He is known as the boy who lived, because when he was around a year old, an evil wizard named Voldemort killed his parents, Lily and James Potter. When Voldemort tried to kill Harry, the spell backfired and instead harmed Voldemort. Since Voldemort was trying to take over the wizarding world and was killing people left and right, this ended the years of terror that had gripped the wizarding world. Everyone knows who Harry is, and he's basically a hero. However, he did not grow up in the wizarding world and is oblivious to the fact that he is famous. Instead, he grew up with muggles. He was reluctantly taken in by the Dursleys, his aunt and uncle. They hated him and hated the idea of witches and wizards. He was neglected by his aunt and uncle while growing up, forced to live under the stairs, and bullied by his cousin Dudley. He was an outcast and did not have any friends while living in the muggle world, but strange things would happen around him when his emotions were heightened, and this caused even more neglect and abuse from his guardians. He seems to be surprisingly well-adjusted for a neglected and abused child, though. We have our bad guy, Voldemort. He's also known as He Who Should Not Be Named. He was an evil wizard who terrorized the wizarding world. He was a previous student of Hogwarts and in the House of Slytherin. He obtained many followers over the years, and they became dubbed Death Eaters. He wanted to take over the wizarding world, become immortal, and wanted to keep Muggleborns completely out of the wizarding world. We have Dumbledore. He is the head of Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. He is considered to be the best wizard in all the wizarding world. He seems to have knowledge of everything going on all the time. Most of the students look up to him, and he's beloved. He is so well respected that he is often approached by the Ministry of Magic for advice and help. We have Rubeus Hagrid. Hagrid is the gameskeeper at Hogwarts. He is an incredibly nice half-giant who loves magical creatures, especially dangerous ones. He is described as having hands the size of trash can lids and feet the size of baby dolphins. He was a prior student at Hogwarts, but was expelled in his third year. Despite this, Dumbledore kept him on as gamekeeper. He's technically not allowed to do magic, but occasionally gets around it by using his pink umbrella, which contains part of his wand, which was broken when he was expelled. Then we have Ron Weasley. Ron is also an 11-year-old boy. He is in the same class as Harry. He has 5 older brothers and 1 younger sister. 3 of his brothers are currently at Hogwarts as well. The troublemaker twins, Fred and George, and the straight-laced Percy, who's a prefect. Ron quickly becomes Harry's first friend at school. They spend most of their time together, and he helps Harry adjust to the wizarding world. We have Hermione Granger. Hermione is muggle-born, but due to her cleverness and innate powers, she was invited to Hogwarts. She is 11 years old and is described as having wild brown hair and buck teeth. She is a first year with Harry and Ron as well. She is incredibly smart, follows rules, and is a perfectionist. This is annoying to many people, and she has trouble making friends at school. However, eventually, she does become friends with Harry and Ron. She is the cleverest out of all of them and stresses the importance of school and education. Without her, Harry and Ron would be dead 10 times over. So we have a couple key professors in this episode. We have Professor McGonagall, Professor Snape, and Professor Quirrell. Professor McGonagall is the head of Gryffindor. She teaches transfiguration and is known as being strict but fair. Professor Snape is the head of Slytherin and teaches potions. He hates children, especially Harry, as Snape has history with Harry's parents. Then we have Professor Quirrell, who teaches Defense Against the Dark Arts. He has a stutter and seems to be constantly scared and nervous. He wears a turban around his head that has a strange smell coming from it. For our location, the majority of this book takes place at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. It is considered by some to be the best magical school in the world. The school itself is a castle in Scotland. It is considered the safest place in the world. There are four houses that students get sorted into in their first year. There's a Slytherin, whose main trait is ambition, and it's generally considered the evil house because it's where Voldemort came from. Then there's Gryffindor, and the students in that house are known for bravery. Naturally, an intense rivalry between Gryffindor and Slytherin exists. Then there's Ravenclaw, who are known for being smart and witty. Finally, there's Hufflepuff, who are known to be kind and loyal.
As an infant, Harry Potter was left on the doorstep of his Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon's house after his parents, Lily and James Potter, were murdered by one of the darkest wizards of their time, Lord Voldemort. When Lord Voldemort attempted to kill Harry, his magic backfired, leaving Harry with a lightning-shaped scar and resulting in the end of his reign of terror. What actually happened to Voldemort, no one is truly sure. Some people think he died, some people think he just disappeared. Our story flashes forward 10 years later with Harry Potter doing the best he can to grow up amongst his hateful aunt and uncle and their alarmingly spoiled child and Harry's cousin, Dudley. Harry, when he was growing up, has had several odd and unexplainable things happen to him, but it seems that there is a great reason for these odd things that have happened to him. Harry discovers that he is a wizard, as were his parents, and now that he's come of age, he's been invited to attend Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Hagrid, the gamekeeper at Hogwarts, takes Harry to Diagon Alley to gather supplies for school, and Harry quickly discovers that he is a celebrity for the role that he played in ending Voldemort's reign. In addition to realizing that there is so, so much about this new magical world that he does not know. He starts school at Hogwarts and is sorted into Gryffindor House, where he makes friends with Ronald Weasley and eventually with Hermione Granger. However, he also makes some enemies, including one of his professors, Severus Snape, and Draco Malfoy. A series of events throughout the school year end up with Calamity, with a troll running loose in the castle, Harry nearly being thrown from his broom during a Quidditch match, and nearly being attacked by a dark creature in the dark forest. Harry and his friends discover that the Sorcerer's Stone, a stone that can create the elixir of life, is being kept in Hogwarts Castle. And they deduce that someone is attempting to break into the chamber where the stone is held to steal it and use it to help Voldemort return to power. Will Harry, Ron, and Hermione be able to prevent the thief, and by extension, Voldemort's return? This is your spoiler alert. If you somehow managed to avoid this story up until now, 10 points to you. Otherwise, spoilers abound from here on out. So this was the third time I've read this book. I still really enjoyed this book as an adult. The first time I read these books, it was an act of rebellion. So when these books first came out, I think this book was published in like 1997 or 1996, or 98 maybe. Anyway, whenever it came out, I wasn't allowed to read them or to watch the movies because my parents felt that they contained witchcraft and that they weren't safe. And then, so I could not watch the movies. I could not read the books. And then when I was a junior in high school, I had my fantasy awakening and I read The Hobbit for the first time. And after that, I just delved into fantasy books, which led me to these, which I read my senior year of high school. And this was like one of my first moments of realizing that I could hold different opinions than my parents. And it was just such a I just loved these books when I first read them, and I still really loved this one when I read it too.
Yeah. I love this book. I mean, I love the whole series. I don't know how many times I read it. I read it when it first came out and then multiple times throughout my life since then. But I went to a Catholic school, so I knew a lot of people like you. Not a lot of people, but I knew people in that same scenario,
Yeah.
where they weren't allowed to read it, to watch it, anything. They would leave conversations if we were discussing it. So,
Yeah.
yeah. But it's so easy to get immersed in this series and world, and I still love it.
Yeah.
I also knew people who, so it came out, I think I was 7 or 8, right? And I knew people who were convinced it was real, and they were getting a letter when they were 11. And it was just, obviously nobody did, unfortunately. At least I
Yeah.
didn't. Maybe they did, and I
Maybe
didn't
they
know.
did.
I don't know. Did you have anyone like that? Did you know anyone like
No,
that? Or is that no?
I didn't. No, none of my, I don't recall any of my friends at the time being really big into Harry Potter. So it's not like I was hanging with people who could read these books and I couldn't. So we were also super churchy at that point. So most of the other people who I was around at the time were also not reading these books. That, which is part of why I wasn't allowed to read them. We were super churchy at the time. There are parts of the story that hit differently reading it as an adult than they hit when I was a 17-year-old reading them, like that Harry was likely neglected and denied physical touch and affection by his caregivers when he was growing up. I just don't think that he was made to live in a closet and sometimes not fed. And I don't know if it's in this, I don't think it's in this book. I think it's in the next book. His Uncle Vernon like slaps him across the face. So possibly experienced some physical abuse. There's no way this child would be so well adjusted
Right.
given how he was likely raised. And so I thought about it way too much and it made me cry.
I didn't have that experience rereading it. I think I was just indignant the way I was when I read it when I was younger too. I was just like furious for Harry. But yeah, I had the same note too about him being well adjusted.
Yeah.
How is he just jumps right into the world? But sure he was happy to leave.
Oh, yeah.
The Dursleys, they're so against anything different. Like his uncle is driving to work and he sees someone in an emerald green cloak and is just horrified by it. He's pearl clutching because somebody is wearing emerald green cloak. What?
Hagrid gets Harry his first birthday cake. My heart just like exploded. It's just, there's so many things that Harry's never really been shown. He's never really, it doesn't sound like, based on what we read of his aunt and uncle, it sounds like he's never really been shown like affection or caring.
No, not at all. Even the, well, we find out who she is later, but even the lady across the street, right, who they leave her with, she's terrible to him too. And it, well, we find out later there's a reason for it, but still,
Yeah.
there wasn't one person in his life that showed him any kindness
Yeah.
like that.
Also, Dudley, his cousin, would 100% grow up to be like a Chad or a Kyle or just terrible and like maybe physically abusive. They talk about how he doesn't get like something for his birthday. And he like throws a fit. Oh, he doesn't get, his dad won't let him have one of the letters that comes for Harry. So he like throws a kicking fit. He kicks his mom and hits his dad. And he's 11 years old. We have long grown out of the tantrum phase of our lives.
Well, one of the first scenes with him is it's Dudley's birthday and he's throwing a fit because he had two presents less than the year before.
Yeah. Voldemort always struck me as such a narcissist. I bet it would just gall him to be taken down by an infant. I bet that he was just like mortified
Oh,
and
yeah.
so angry.
Yes. I could just see him like floating off being indignant about all of this, just
Yes.
furious. A one-year-old child.
Yeah.
And obviously it makes sense that Harry becomes his obsession later on. Or
Harry gets his letter to go to Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. Hagrid shows up and takes them shopping. The scene in Diagon Alley where they go to the bank and they get Harry's school supplies and his wand and his robes. That's one of my favorite scenes.
The wand scene in that is one of my favorites. I love that.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah.
There's just so much to marvel at. And he doesn't know anything about this world. He didn't know that magic existed before he met Hagrid. And there's just so much for him to marvel at. But also he realizes very quickly that he's a celebrity and has no idea why and doesn't understand why, but there's all of like this just awareness and maybe like pressure that comes with that. Because as soon as they walk into the bar, people realize that it's Harry Potter and they start queuing to shake his hand and say thank you. And that's a lot for an 11-year-old.
Yeah. And one of the people he'd already met before because he bowed to him at some point. But also later on, we find out he's in multiple books. How weird would that be to find out that you're talked about in books?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have no, and yeah, like to be a celebrity and have no awareness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It would just be, I would think, really overwhelming. I also love that him. So we have this moment where he's like, I don't have any money. I can't buy anything. And Hagrid's like, well, your parents had money. Like, you have money. And so he has this opportunity to buy things that are just for him.
Mm-hmm.
That aren't Dudley's discards. He gets to pick what he wants. He has a choice. He has some power because he has money. And he has someone that actually cares, or at least doesn't mind giving him the ability to choose. I love on the train to Hogwarts when he's with Ron and the lady comes by with the trolley. Mm-hmm. He just buys everything. He buys some of everything that she has with her sweets to sell because he can.
Yeah. And I love that he shares it.
Yeah.
Do we know what his parents did for a living? Because they were young when he died. And I want to know how they had that much money. Because it sounds like they had a decent amount of money.
I thought they were Aurors.
Were they? But they were young. Oh, James was independently wealthy from family money when he left Hogwarts.
Wow.
So much so that he was able to support himself, Sirius, and Lily as full-time, unpaid fighters for the Order of the Phoenix. Oh, so back to the scene with the cart. I love all the descriptions in this are so great of like the jumping frogs, the chocolate frogs, and the realization the first time that he sees a card where the person doesn't stay in it, like the picture. So Dumbledore doesn't stay in the card the whole time. And I was like, man, you know, we kind of have like GIFs that are similar, I feel like, because they always moved around in their pictures and stuff. I was like, we're getting there.
Yeah. Maybe one day. I also really like that that's a thing that comes back
mm-hmm.
in the other parts of the story because there are other humans. So they have a roommate who he likes a soccer team and he puts up a poster in their room of one of the players from his favorite soccer team. And I think it's Ron is like poking the poster to try to get the person in it to move. That comment comes back a lot of times, or like a couple of times in the story. I think it's a nice way to keep tying it back into, because what a life, like how cool would that be?
Mm-hmm.
That also makes me wonder though, like in the age of the selfie.
Oh yeah. What would it be like?
What would that be like? What happens to all of the terrible discard pictures? Could wizards even use phones?
I feel like there was something addressed about this, like that the author addressed it at some point about how technology works, because they have running water, toilets, stuff like that, and that's not magic. Right. That's science. I don't know. Although then they use quills instead of pens.
Yeah.
Which seems inefficient.
It does.
They just kept the efficient things of the Muggle world, like toilets.
There you go. I also really enjoyed the Christmas scene. That's another of my favorites. Harry doesn't go home for Christmas. He stays in the castle happily because Christmas sucks with the Dursleys. Mm-hmm. So he happily stays, and so do the Weasleys. And it's the first time that he like gets presents.
Yeah.
And they're from people who actually care about him. Miss Weasley gives him a sweat. She makes him his own Weasley sweater.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets his father's invisibility cloak, which is so special because he has nothing of his parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. And I love that sweater that he gets. And I think it's funny because Ron's like, oh, no, you got one, too. But Harry feels included.
Yeah.
So he's not mad at it. Like, he's somebody made me. Somebody thought of me, took the time to make this for me.
Right.
Personalized it for me. That's a big thing. I have a lot of favorite scenes, and I think I just like this book, but I love the Forbidden Forest scene. I don't 100% know why, because it's really sad when they find, you know, the dying unicorn, but also the description of the unicorn is so pretty.
Yeah.
It's just a really great descriptive moment, I think, and it really stuck with me. And also Centaur.
Yeah, Ferenz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked how his whole conversation with Harry was so cryptic.
Oh, yeah.
They're just so mysterious. Like, he looks up to the sky and he's like, he says something that makes no sense to Harry, and then he just keeps looking up, and then another centaur comes up and they talk, and that one looks up at the sky and they say more things that make no sense to Harry. I feel like you would probably really enjoy that, since you enjoy your riddle so much.
Oh, and the sorting hat scene. I love the song. Mm-hmm. It's such a good scene. And it's so funny because I know Fred and George hyped it up for Ron. Mm-hmm. You know, telling him, oh, you're going to have to fight something, or it's actual test and stuff. And then they get there and you just have to put a hat on.
Yeah.
Have you taken any of the what house are you quizzes?
I'm in Ravenclaw.
Yeah. I get Ravenclaw too, but I think it's just because I like riddles. But like in real life, I'd probably be in Hufflepuff.
Yeah. I don't really like riddles, but I like knowledge and science and studying. So
yeah,
I'm not good at riddles the way that you are. There's a thing, because not everyone fits really neatly into one house or the other. Have you heard of like the Slitherpuff?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I want to say that there's a thing that like gives you your breakdown or something, like how much of one house versus another house you are.
Yeah. I do really well at getting into the Ravenclaw common room.
Yeah.
But then would just do, you know, moderate in my classes. So, and in terms of being brave, no.
Oh, no.
No.
Also, in that scene, we hear, read, I guess if you were doing an audiobook, you would hear the Hogwarts like theme song.
Yeah, I forgot completely about that.
I would love to bear witness to this song being sung, because Dumbledore, he kicks it off and encourages everyone to pick the beat that they want, the tone that they want. Everybody sings it differently. It must just be like a cacophony in there. Like, I think it's hysterical. I think it would be such a thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He says that Fred and George Weasley finish it up with they're singing it as a funeral dirge, slow and long and deep. I also really like the introduction to Quidditch.
Mm-hmm.
Harry is automatically good at it. He
is scouted by Professor McGonagall and meets Oliver Wood. They get started as him being the seeker, and he's just great. I love that this child who has felt like an outsider for his entire life has finally found a place where he fits in and where he has people who truly care about him.
Yep.
And I think part of that is why J.K. Rowling being anti-trans has been so hurtful for some people as well, because she created this world where a lot of folks found Harry's struggles relatable and the struggles of other characters as well. He found a home where people who didn't fit in among the muggles, because of their abilities, they do fit in. And then in real life, she demonstrated that she doesn't believe that.
Yeah. Very disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah, it's just so hurtful. And part of that, I think, is where some of these like complex feelings come in, because she created this world that a lot of people found comfort in. And then when you act that way, it violates those feelings, or it can violate those feelings. And then this thing that became so special to you and important to you feels tainted.
I wonder about people who got like Harry Potter tattoos, just to right. be blindsided by that. But there is this, something to be said for, you know, it still means something to you.
Right.
Right. If you remove the author out of the equation. But yeah, to create such a world that's built around the outcast not being outcast anymore and not living those words. I mean, she spent years writing these books, years creating this world.
Yeah.
These characters.
Right. And creating a world where people who were magic and living among muggles finally had a place where they could feel safe and included. So when I was preparing for this episode, I looked through a bunch of, like, I followed the whole anti-trans train of J.K. Rowling since 2020. I think that's when it started. And there were several comments from the people who had participated in the movie. So Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson and Tom Felton, who expressed their support for the trans community, but also made comments, which I thought were really good, about how nobody can take from you what Hogwarts means to you, what this world means to you. So just because she has said these things that are awful doesn't mean that she can take your feelings. She can't take that from you because they're yours.
Yep. Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it, because otherwise, man, because this is, I don't want to say pivotal, but this is a big thing in a lot of people's lives growing up. You yeah. grow up with the characters.
Yes.
You know? I mean, I started this when I was like 7 or 8, right? And I think it ended when I was in high school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
And the last movies came out when we were in college.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a pretty big part of, you know, just pop culture in general, too, or, you know.
Yeah.
What was going on? I do like in that scene where Harry first finds out and he's a natural at Quidditch, he stands up to Draco, because Draco is taunting Neville and has his Remembrall. And we see Harry being brave and standing up to a bully. And it makes me think of how he was bullied by Dudley and, you know, just the Dursleys in general, and he's determined not to let that happen to others and is protective. And I think it's great to see that in him and kind of see the trajectory of his character starting, right?
Yeah.
And it's great to be able to, you couldn't stand up for yourself, but to be able to stand up for somebody else is really nice.
Yeah. It's easier sometimes to stand up for another person than it is to stand up for yourself. This also has impacts on the other characters too. Ron and Harry stand up to Crabbe and Goyle together, and then later in the Quidditch game, Draco is making hateful comments about Harry dying in the Quidditch game, And he finally, I think, makes a comment about either Harry or about Ron's family. And Ron lays Draco out.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, later on, we see them encouraging Neville to stand up for himself too.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, so this book is only around 300 pages, right? And so much happens without it feeling like overwhelming or being done quickly. So we have the world building, and it's pretty detailed. This is like solid world building that we have here. Our character introductions, our side characters have depth and backstory to it. And then we have all of these, the big scenes that happen, right? Like you said, Diagon Alley, we've got the Quidditch scene. The forest is a big one. We've got a dragon and a troll, and then the trials at the end. It so much is in it without it feeling overwhelming, which I think is great.
Yeah.
It makes it an easy, like a quick read. But you still get a lot from it.
Yeah. You get a ton from it. It's a lot packed into not very many pages, which is kind of astounding, because I think about like all of these other books that we read that are adult fiction or fantasy that are like 800 pages long. And I'm just like, is this necessary? Does it really need to be this long?
Right.
Because she did this in 300 pages. Can do that.
Yeah. Well, I'd say especially the world building. I mean, we have read books where it takes 300 pages to build the world.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this is detailed. We've got rules. We've got some history. There's so much. Somehow she did it.
Yeah.
Don't know how. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned rules. I think that the rules of magic of underage people doing magic are crazy. I don't understand them at all. And it's like this in every single book. And I'm just like, what? What?
Yes.
They're not allowed to do magic when they're not at school.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to school and they can almost kill you while you're there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use magic at home and you're under, I don't know, 18 or 17, I guess, they can expel you from school.
With no questions asked, even.
Yeah, just no questions. That's it. You're done.
Nope.
See ya, never.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems excessive.
Yeah.
There should be, like, a three strikes rule or something. I think that it's crazy every single time.
Mm-hmm. I know. And it's funny because in one of the movies, right, he's under the blankets reading a book and he uses Lumos or whatever. And I'm sitting there going, he'd be expelled.
Yeah.
When I watch,
that's magic. So I don't understand. I feel like it's a little bit like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where the points are just, or the rules are just like made up and they just decide, oh yeah, that's magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much magic.
Yeah.
Expelled. Like, why is it from zero to expelled? I have questions. I have problems. I don't like this system.
Mm-mm.
When on the way to Hogwarts, Harry and Ron have a confrontation with Draco Malfoy and his goons, Crabbe and Goyle, on the train. And Harry declines to be Draco's friend after he insults Ron and says, I think I can tell who the wrong sort are for myself. And Draco says, I'd be careful if I were you, Potter. Unless you're a bit politer, you'll go the same way as your parents. They didn't know what was good for them either. What?
Kids are mean.
What a terrible thing to say. Yeah, that's awful.
Okay. What? And what does that mean? You'll go the same way as your parents, but Voldemort
is that a death threat?
Right? Is he threatening him?
I mean, so you know from that statement immediately where Malfoy's parents lay their allegiance.
Yep.
If their child believes that the Potters didn't know what was good for them, and they obviously didn't go the same way as his parents. I mean, you automatically know where these people stand. Hate is taught.
Yep. It's quite a statement from an 11-year-old, too.
From a child. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of another bully in this book, the scene in the potions class with Snape was so much worse than I remembered. Harry is doing literally nothing to draw Snape's attention, and Snape singles him out in front of the class to ask him questions about potion stuff that he obviously doesn't know, because he didn't know he was a magical person until 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the fandom has been way too forgiving of Severus Snape.
Well, he loved Lily.
Yeah, that's all it takes. Alan Rickman portrayed him so well in the movies, and I think that made people a little more empathetic from him to him. But like, if they read this book, and from what I remember of the other books, he stalked
Lily.
In this book, an adult man bullies a child because his feelings got hurt by the child's dad like 15 or 20 years ago. Go to therapy.
Yep. So, yeah, as an adult, Snape definitely hits different. Why be a teacher if you're going to hate students? Why? Yeah. Because there's a difference. We've got McGonagall, right? And she's a strict teacher, but she's fair, and the students don't particularly like that, right? But she teaches. Yeah. She's effective, and she's fair. And then we have Snape.
Severus. Dumbledore! Ron Weasley! Oh, gosh. Where'd she get started? It's hard to stop. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the moment was there.
It was there. And he just like hates kids except for Slytherins. Like, even he's not even, it's not, he doesn't, he singles out Harry, yes, but he's also terrible to all of the other students.
Yeah.
And reading this and thinking about this, my feelings towards some of this have changed a bit, right?
Yeah.
Especially towards Dumbledore and Hogwarts and, you know, Snape being terrible. So I know Dumbledore is really beloved, but come on, he kind of sucks. Like,
say more.
In this book, he's not too bad, right? I understand most of his actions, but as the series goes on, he's just terrible. He keeps incredibly important and personal, like, information from Harry, like, about Harry, like, Harry's own information that he should know, right? He keeps it from him, and it causes so many problems. Harry gets into I know he has to get into adventures, but he puts himself in danger so much, right? I mean, anyway, that happens. And like, he employs teachers who hate children, Snape, right? And he doesn't ever discipline this teacher or say anything to him, like, hey, maybe don't be terrible like that to the students. You're the head of the school, rein one of your teachers in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
He sends kids, 11-year-olds into a forbidden forest with many dangerous things. I know it's detention and he has Hagrid with him and everything, but it's Hagrid and then a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just protecting these kids, these four kids, mm-hmm. from everything in the woods. What? Okay. And then Hagrid loves Dumbledore because when he was expelled as 13 years old, Dumbledore kept him there as a worker. Like,
child labor?
Hagrid would have been 13 years old. And so that means Dumbledore was just like, I don't know, here's a hut. Now you, what? What?
Go live alone in the forest.
Right?
Never thought about this before.
There are other wizarding schools too. Like, they could have directed Hagrid somewhere else and had, like, but no, he stopped a 13-year-old's education and said, okay, well, now you live in a hut on campus. What? All right. So that's a thing. And then a Hogwarts as a school, right? Somehow it's considered the safest place in wizarding world. But over the next 7 books,
We see that's not true. What? No, it is not. They almost die every year. So it can't be that safe. And the houses, they're basically evil, brave, smart, and everybody else. They're 11-year-old children when they get sorted into this.
Yeah.
I don't. Oh.
So I had completely, I don't know what I thought Slytherins were. I forgot that they were supposed to be like cunning and ambitious. Like that was their thing. I just knew like Slyther bad. And I know that all the Slytherins are not bad, but like, why is that the message that mainly comes through? Cunning and ambition are not bad traits. They remind me of Hermione. I'm wondering if maybe she shouldn't have been in that house because she's very ambitious and she's very clever.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we decide that cunning and ambition are negative traits? And is it just because Voldemort came from that house and their advisor is a jerk? Why does that have to be bad? And has it always been that way? Or is it just since Voldemort came out of that house that they've decided that Slytherin? Well, no, because the founder of Slytherin House was a, what do they call it? Like a purist or something. He didn't think that people who were born, who were muggle born, mm-hmm. Who didn't come from the pure blooded wizarding families should be part of Hogwarts. So I guess that they have always had that in their history. Maybe that's where some of it comes from.
I think I'm trying to remember Salazar Slytherin. Like, was he, did he do bad things? Maybe it goes all the way back to the founder.
Yeah, I don't, it's been too long. I do know that he was real pissed off when they, this is in the second book, I think, when we find this out, he was real pissed off that they wouldn't keep non-pure magic people in the school. So he kind of like separated himself and left the school, didn't he, or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, it's a snake. Snakes aren't like generally seen as being, you know, snake.
I mean, they're not, snakes do a lot of good for us in our world. True. I do think it would be hilarious if they, because Hufflepuff is a, it's a badger, right?
Yeah.
Like a Hufflepuff honey badger.
They would be tough.
Hufflepuff don't give a shit.
No. Not at all.
Yeah, I think that would be so funny. Yeah. Hogwarts is kind of problematic. Someone sent me a meme recently. It's like, can you imagine the insurance that they would have to pay? Well, we lost another student this year. They got eaten by a snake, a giant snake. We're not going to cover you anymore.
Right?
We are canceling this life insurance policy or this castle insurance policy.
They're paying out way too many wrongful death suits.
Oh, definitely. You mentioned something about Dumbledore not telling Harry important information and it becoming more, but that shows up in this book too. When Harry wakes up after fighting Voldemort, mm-hmm. child fighting Voldemort, he asks Dumbledore, because Dumbledore says, do you have any questions? And Harry says, well, Voldemort said that he only killed my mother because she tried to stop him from killing me. Mm-hmm. But why would he want to kill me in the first place?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't tell him about the prophecy.
Yeah. He says, alas, the first thing you ask me, I cannot tell you. Not today. Not now. You will know one day. Put it from your mind for now, Harry. When you're older, I know you hate to hear that. When you are ready, you will know. Like, what? What? The child was ready to walk into the chamber and die today.
Mm-hmm.
But okay.
Can't tell them about the prophecy.
Yeah. The child literally said, well, if I get expelled doing this, I'll go live in Little Whinging again with the Dursleys, and it'll take Voldemort maybe more time to find me, but he's still going to kill me anyway. So, but he's not ready.
So we talked a little bit about why Snape is terrible, but he is like an incel too. Because like you said, he's obsessing all this time over Lily. He stalked her for a little bit, right? Feels like he has some right to her, and brings us on to hate on her child because it's not his kid, sort of thing. It's very incel-y.
A movie Snape is definitely more likable than book Snape.
I love Alan Rickman in that role. Absolutely. He's terrific.
Absolutely genius. A great role for him.
Yes. And as I was reading the book, I heard it in Alan Rickman's voice too. Like when it gets to that point, like you wouldn't want people to think you're up to something. Yeah. Obviously I can't do a decent impression even close to it, but that's what I hear in my head. And it works. Yeah. This works so well.
So Harry gets his father's invisibility cloak and walks around the castle, and he finds the mirror of Erised. And this scene made me a little bit weepy, mm-hmm. because this mirror shows you the thing that you want to see most in the world. And so Harry sees his parents, probably for the first time in his life, as a person who would remember them. Because like at 1 year old, when his parents died and he last saw them, he's not going to remember that, right? Mm-hmm. That would be extraordinary, and maybe he is extraordinary, but like he's seeing them for the first time, mm-hmm. like this. And I don't imagine that the Dursleys kept pictures of his parents in their house as much as they seem to disdain them. Petunia doesn't really even seem to be sad about her sister's death at the start of this book. So he sees his parents, and he sees his other relatives who we would have never seen before either. And it's just such a reminder of the trauma and the loss that he's experienced. His parents were murdered in front of him as an infant, and he was left with people who raised him with no kindness and just out of a sense of obligation. Mm-hmm. And he just wanted more than anything to see his family.
So at the end of the book, Hagrid brings in a photo album for Harry. He reached out to friends, like Harry's parents' friends and people in their class, and got all of these pictures and made a photo album for him so he could see his parents, what they were like. And that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something tangible that he can have, right?
Right.
A picture of them, because the mirror of Erised, right? Mm-hmm. It's gone now.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have that. There are no other pictures available to him, and so Hagrid gives him this amazing gift of not just one picture, but multiple pictures.
I love the thought that goes into him creating that album for him.
Yeah.
Harry goes to the mirror of Erised 3 times, and on the third visit, Dumbledore shows up and he explains what the mirror does to him and encourages him to try not to find the mirror again. And I feel like Harry maybe needed some empathy here that I don't think that he got. Because there's a lot of grief that would be attached to this thing that let you see the people that you loved and lost being taken from you.
Mm-hmm.
So he's distracted in the days that follow, I think, because he's grieving.
Yeah. And at that point, he also doesn't know if he'll ever see his parents in any way again, you know?
I think Ron's greatest desires are interesting too. He sees himself as the head boy, the captain of the Quidditch team, and having just won the House Cup. He mentions feeling a little bit overshadowed by his siblings. He just wants to be seen,
mm-hmm.
for who he is, and not just Fred and George or Bill and Charlie's younger brother.
Yeah.
And he mentions it earlier in the book too, when he's expressing his anxiety about what house he's going to be sorted in. Like, if he doesn't get into Gryffindor, then it's like he lets his family down. But if he does, it's not a big deal because it's what should have happened anyway.
Yeah. And he can also kind of connect to Harry on all those, like, he always gets all the hand-me-downs, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's some connection there.
What do you think you would see in the mirror?
I genuinely don't know. I mean, maybe me living in a cabin in the woods by myself.
Yeah.
Or maybe not by myself, maybe with people I love. I don't know. I really don't know. What do you think you'd see?
I feel like probably something similar, like living surrounded by trees.
Mm-hmm.
Probably with people that I care about and cats, just like living a joyful life. Mm-hmm. Hiking.
Yeah.
Laying in the moss, you know.
I just had this picture of you like laying in moss, but like moving around, being like, yes, moss.
Yes, just like really digging into it.
Yes.
Trying to get it to accept me. It's part of its environment. Yeah. Harry has sharp, persistent scar pain and never tells a grown up.
No. And it's never happened before either. Like, if it was something that happened while he was growing up, that'd be one thing.
Right.
But then he just gets like this horrible, sharp pain and he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. I think it means something bad is coming. Oh, yeah. You're not going to tell a grown up? Like, the kids in this school are just raising themselves.
Yep. Yeah.
And then I had a thought, what if there's an alternate universe, Harry Potter, where he has brain cancer and is in a coma and Hogwarts is something that he's made up and the scar pain is an echo from the real world?
Oh.
How about that?
That would be interesting.
Maybe someone's already written that.
Maybe. I like the alternate universe Harry Potters that are out there. I just read it like 2 months ago, I think, but Manigold.
Yeah.
Just a shout out to that book or that fan fiction. It was so good.
I heard that she's getting like a publishing deal or something.
Oh, yeah. I think. Oh, wait. Did you tell me that or did my sister tell me? But she has to remove anything Harry Potter related.
Yeah.
Which.
It's like the whole story, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. It's the whole story.
Hermione is kind of a nag, especially in the first part of this book before her and Ron and Harry get to be really good friends. She kind of annoyed me because she's so into following the rules and stuff. But I would probably act kind of the same way as Hermione. I tend to be a rule follower unless the rules inconvenience me.
I really like Fred and George, right? Mm-hmm. They're popular characters, I think, in general. But they're good comic relief. And what I really like about them is that it's mentioned that they get really good grades. And they're smart, too. And it's, I feel like in books, a lot of the times, the comedic relief are kind of stupid, you know? And that's what makes them kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like that. But Fred and George, they're funny without, you know, they're without that trope of being stupid with it. They're still good students. They get good grades. They have a lot of good future around them. But they just joke around and are pranksters.
So... the children decide to save the school and the world by extension.
Yes.
Big step for 11-year-olds, you know? It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What's frustrating is they tell the grown-ups, they tell the people that you're supposed to tell when there's danger, that there's going to be danger. And the grown-ups are like, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. And in fact, if you do worry about it, we're probably going to kick you out of school. So mind your business.
Mm-hmm.
It was so frustrating. So they decide to save the school anyway. It alarms me that the safeguards on the Sorcerer's Stone were simple enough that first year magic students could get through them. I know that they're supposed to be really clever and that Hermione's super smart and talented.
The spell, in order to break into the room with where Fluffy is just Alamora. It's the first spell they learn, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe, like, let's do some blood sacrifice here or something. Not that. But something a little bit more complicated than the first spell you learn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
A complicated lock thing or, I don't know, something, right? You'd think there would be something.
Yeah,
at least it'd be warded. At least it would be warded against that spell being used. I don't know.
Yeah,
They didn't try that hard.
You're right.
They kind of phoned that in.
Yeah. It definitely should have at least been a little bit more complicated to get into that room. And I get it. Hagrid's like, there's no way anybody's going to get past a giant three-headed dog. Okay. And I guess Dumbledore does warn everybody not to go near the third floor, whatever, unless they want to die. So he tells them, but like, what? The way to open the super secret magic door to the thing that's supposed to be one of the most well-guarded places in the world, that the way to open it is just the unlocking spell. Okay. That is ridiculous, but I did really enjoy the scene.
Yes.
How they worked in different safeguards based on the professor, like the devil's snare for Professor Sprout and the key with wings. I forget who that one was for. And the chess with McGonagall's. Mm-hmm. The potions thing. I felt like you would have done really good at the potions thing. So,
fingers,
because it was just a riddle.
I do really like in the scene when they first drop down into the devil's snare, Hermione recognizes, oh, it's scared of fire. We need a fire. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, but there's no wood.
Yes, that was hysterical. It's either Ron or Harry who's like, you're a witch.
And I could see that happening. That could very, panicking. That could very easily happen. She didn't grow up in the wizarding world, right? She grew up a muggle. So, of course, oh, this thing's scared of fire. Let me find wood.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, that was, you're a witch. Are you not a witch?
Yeah. Harry confronts Professor Quirrell,
mm-hmm.
who he thought he would be confronting Snape. But it turns out Quirrell has been host to Voldemort inside of his body for the whole year. And he reveals that Snape was actually trying to help him. Mm-hmm. What a shock. Harry almost dies.
Mm-hmm.
He saves the school and the world from doom and is hospitalized, but he's okay. All he gets for this is 60 points for Gryffindor and some candy. No trophy? Mm-hmm. No medal? Nothing that says, oh yeah, we all could have died, but because of me, we didn't. So,
well, you know, they won the House Cup, or, you know, that made them win.
He didn't even win all of the points that they needed to win the cup.
Yes, but, you know, Dumbledore can't show favorites like that. So,
okay. Snape can, sure. Snape can, like, okay, but, yeah, sure, okay. So, yeah, 60 points for Gryffindor. Ron and Harry. Nope. Ron and Hermione both got 50 points, and Neville got 10 points. Mm-hmm. Poor Neville.
He was just...
Bless him.
Oh.
And collateral damage a lot.
Yes. I just find it entertaining when he's standing up to them about leaving, and Ron's like, you're not supposed to stand up to us.
Yeah. So Gryffindor wins the House Cup. Everybody goes home.
Mm-hmm. And Harry gets sent back to abusive.
Yep, caregivers.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. In one of the books, he asks Dumbledore why he has to go back. Right? And I really wish Dumbledore could have been like, sure, go like spend the summer with Ron. I know there's a reason why he has to go back to the Dursleys and everything, but
I don't understand why he couldn't tell him.
Right?
Like, yeah. Hey, you have to go back and spend time with your biological family because there's magic that keeps you safe when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know, he could have just said that and Harry probably wouldn't have, you know.
Right. It would have at least made sense. Like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. There's a terrible dark wizard that's trying to murder me every single day, it sounds like. So, yeah, safety. Sure.
What Voldemort was doing over the summer. I guess plotting what he was going to do during the school year.
Probably scheming, planning. Scheming. Yeah. This does kind of read like a stalkerish relationship, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Harry becomes his obsession.
Yeah. So we discussed before we talked about this book some ways to ethically consume J.K. Rowling's content, given that purchasing Harry Potter books directly beneficial, like financially benefits her, which we tried to avoid. So we, I read an old copy of like a physical copy of the book, and that's what you did too, isn't it?
Actually, it turns out I owned it already on Kindle, so I just read it on Kindle. But I didn't buy it or support it through Kindle Unlimited, because I know even though she probably makes like pennies in Kindle Unlimited, I'm not. It adds up.
Yeah. Unfortunately, J.K. Rowling just continues to double down on her anti-trans beliefs. Even as recently as like a couple of weeks ago. And I think it's interesting that all of the younger main actors from the movies, like Emma Watson and Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint and Bonnie White, Wright and Tom Felton, have been pretty outspoken in support of the trans community. But the older actors like Ralph Fiennes, who played Voldemort, and Helena Bonham Carter and Robbie Coltrane have all expressed their support for J.K. Rowling. Daniel Radcliffe like actively works with the Trevor Project in support of trans issues.
I don't think it's that unusual to see the younger people supporting, you know, things like transgender and just in general that sort of stuff, like non-binary, all of that.
Right.
Seems like the younger generation more supportive of that, just in general. So I don't think it's too surprising, although I do think you're right, it's interesting that they all also kind of, I don't want to say lived, but you know, they were immersed in this world, right?
Yeah.
They do have the scripts and everything. I don't know. That blog post she wrote,
it's something, isn't it?
I did not know what to respond to you when you sent that. I was like, oh my god, what do I say to this?
Yeah.
What? Like,
yeah. So back in 2020, on her own page, J.K. Rowling posted a blog post called J.K. Rowling writes about her reasons for speaking out on sex and gender issues.
It seems like a lot of her beliefs in this are rooted in being like, I don't want to share a bathroom with, you know, a trans person, and kind of fear mongering.
Yes.
You know, that's.
Yeah. Like the arguments that we've seen in the United States about generally conservative people who have problems with sharing bathrooms with trans folks. Like, I think she at one point makes a comment about like feeling unsafe in bathroom with trans women, which is an argument that we have definitely seen in the United States.
Yeah. She didn't write it like this, but it came off very much like, I have trans friends, as if that somehow, that doesn't make what you're doing okay, or what you're saying okay.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, it's not how that works.
I know and love trans people, but I don't want to share a bathroom with them.
Right?
Ma'am? That's transphobia.
And she's problematic in other ways, too. So she does do a lot of fat shaming in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Or in this, just throughout the series, along with just people's looks, right? In general. But the goblins at Gringotts. Oh my gosh. Very clearly anti-Semitic with that. Wow. Like, I don't know. But she's got some problematic stuff in there. And then what she actively supports in real life as well is troubling.
Yeah. What do you do when you have an author who writes something that is beloved and meaningful for so many people, who is saying awful things in real life?
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard to come to terms with that and to reconcile it, you know.
And so I think that there are you know, a ton of people out there choosing their own ways to kind of cope with that, which is totally valid, whether that's not ever reading her stuff or supporting any of her works, or not even supporting, purchasing any of that stuff, or I don't know, figuring out what ways that feel ethical for you to do that.
This made me want to watch the movies, but I don't own the movies, so I'm not going to rent them from anything. Right. My sister owns them. I have to get them from her.
Yes. Well, yeah. You could probably purchase from like a third party, right?
Yes.
Like eBay? Could you buy them off of eBay if you bought the actual physical copies?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Right? Because they would be sold by another person.
Mm-hmm.
So she wouldn't get money from that.
Right.
All right. Do we have any quotes that we want to share?
Yes. So do you want to go first?
No, go for it.
Okay. So I picked two. I have "This Happened in the Mirror of Erised" chapter. It does not do well to dwell on dreams and forget to live. So I think this is something that we can forget easily in our day-to-day lives, right? And not necessarily just about dreams, but I think about it with work and family and stuff like that. We get really wrapped up in doing adult stuff that we forget to look outside of that and forget to really live,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I know sometimes I'm like, oh, I finished work. Like, I just want to do nothing. But there's this other time in the day. Like, let me live it. Let me go somewhere. Let me do something, yeah. You know? And it's just kind of easy to forget to do that. And then I also picked one that's kind of depressing, naturally. There is no good and evil. There is only power. And I do not agree with this sentiment. But it's not exactly wrong for the world we live in. Right. Yeah. And the people in power who have this power get to decide what's good or evil a lot of the time, you know, or that's what they get to push forward, right? With whatever right. they think is good, they get to determine what they think is good, right? Like we see with the anti-abortion people, they think that's good, but we don't, you know. So
it's. Right.
Sad, but it's I think it's a good quote, you know, just to have in there.
I like this one from Dumbledore. He says, "To the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure." There's a lot of death in this series,
mm-hmm.
like a lot, and I like the idea of introducing death as something that doesn't have to be terrible, but as something that's just like a natural progression of life. It can be terrible, but we live and we die. And I feel like the author does this well through this series. It shows up even in the last book with the story about the brothers Peveril, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then it's well in the scene in the last movie and last book at the train station. So it shows up and I think is approached in a way that presents it, but doesn't make it something that's meant to be like terrifying. Which is important because it comes for all of us, including Voldemort, who is so opposed to it that he commits atrocities to avoid it.
I think we also have there are cultures out there who do view death this way, right? Naturally, like that's just part of their culture and their life. The westernized version of it, we're very removed from death in certain ways, mm-hmm. you know? A lot of times it's sort of in the hospital sort of thing. We view it to be much more clinical, I think.
Yeah.
Than it is. And then you have cultures or just people and families who, you know, that's just life and they embrace it. Like, this yeah. is what happens. And it's just worked in. And there's not this massive fear around it.
Right.
The way that I feel like is pretty significant in the westernized world.
Okay, well that wraps up Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling. Next time we'll be discussing Berries and Greed by Lily Maine. I believe that's a monster romance, isn't it?
Yes.
Monster romance!
Love this book. So it's, glad we're talking about it.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we did a monster romance. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Alrighty, well, thanks for listening and join us next time. Thank you for listening to Literary Quest.
We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literaryquestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.